What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, February 13th, 2019. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by Imran Khan from Game Informer.
How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing fantastic. It's great to meet you. I've heard about you for so many years from so many different people. Mr. Nintendo, you're one of the Mr. Nintendos in my heart.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I've been told. People tell me Mr. Nintendo. I've never understood why.
Yeah, there's a lot of Mr. Nintendos out there. There's a lot of things going on. A lot of people might be wondering why I'm wearing glasses right now, because I don't normally wear glasses. I have an eye exam today, so I didn't want to wear my contacts because that sounded like a whole to-do. It's pouring rain outside. There's a lot going on. Big day of video game news, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get right to it. This is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We get together to talk about all of the video game news at 10 a.m. Pacific time. You can watch live on Twitch, or you can watch later on youtube.com/kindafunnygames or on podcast services around the globe. Just search for Kinda Funny Games Daily. If you want to be part of the show, you can head to patreon.com/kindafunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get to get the ad show, sorry, the show ad free. It's going to be a good one. I'm telling you right now. A little housekeeping for you. Greg is hosting the 22nd annual Dice Awards tonight with Jessica Chobot. We'll be hosting that on Twitch at 8 p.m. Pacific time. Don't forget, the Kinda Funny World Tour rolls on this Sunday. We're in San Francisco at Triple Voodoo Brewery at 3 p.m. Then it's Kansas City on March 30th and New York on April 6th. If you want more information on all that, go to kindafunny.com/events. Shout out to our Patreon producers for helping make all that happen. Tom Bach, TJ Meehan, Joe Beezer, Trevor Starkey, Muhammad, and Blackjack. You guys are all fantastic. Today, we're talking about the Activision layoffs. We're talking about Amy Hennig's comments and stuff. We're definitely going to be talking about some Nintendo Direct predictions. We're brought to you by Hims, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have seven news stories today.
A Baker's Dozen!
Let's start off with the big one. Activision Blizzard lays off hundreds of employees. Oh, no. This comes from Kotaku's Jason Schreier. Publisher Activision Blizzard has begun its long-rumored layoff process, informing employees this afternoon that it will be cutting staff. On an earnings call this afternoon, the company said that it would be eliminating 8% of its staff. In 2018, Activision Blizzard had roughly 9,600 employees, which would mean nearly 800 people are now out of work. This afternoon, the mega publisher began notifying those who are being laid off across its various organizations, which include Activision, Blizzard, and King. On the earnings call, Activision Blizzard CEO Bobby Kotick told investors that the company had once again achieved record results in 2018, but that the company would be consolidating and restructuring because of missed expectations for 2018 and lowered expectations for 2019. The company said it would be cutting mainly non-game development departments and bolstering its development staff for franchises like Call of Duty and Diablo. In a press release to investors this afternoon, Activision CEO Bobby Kotick wrote, "While our financial results for 2018 were the best in our history, we didn't realize our full potential. To help us reach our full potential, we have made a number of important leadership changes. These changes should enable us to achieve the many opportunities our industry affords us, especially with our powerful owned franchises, our strong commercial capabilities, our direct digital connections to hundreds of millions of players, and our extraordinarily talented employees." You should go to Kotaku.com, check out Jason Schreier's article for way more information, way more quotes from like every angle of all of this. Sad news.
It's incredibly sad. That's 800 people in pretty much any other industry in the world.
Is the industry.
Yeah. It would be a thing of someone who runs a presidential campaign against.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the fact that it kind of goes without note in the gaming industry is really sad and kind of telling.
Yeah. It's absolutely nuts, especially for him to start the phone call off saying we've had a record year.
Yeah, I called into it last afternoon, and I was like, did I come in late? Is he really starting it by saying, hey, we're doing great?
Yeah.
And then immediately, like, he didn't even really mention the layoffs so much in the actual phone call, because it was to investors and it was to, like...
Which makes sense from a business perspective, not from a human being perspective.
Yeah, because I was doing the story at the same time, because I was typing up the layoffs information when the phone call was going on. It's like, okay, I'm talking to Blizzard employees and people who are literally crying because either they lost their jobs, or they know people who lose their jobs, or they don't know yet.
Yeah.
And hearing Kotick talk so glowingly about how they, well, we made $2 billion this year, but we wanted to make $3 billion, so we got to like cut some losses. I'm like, but no, that doesn't make any... from a business perspective, from a very cold, hard business perspective, I understand what they're doing. But from the actual human perspective of there's 800 people who aren't going to, their lives have been at very least disrupted.
Yeah. Like some of these people that have been there for upwards of 15 years.
Yeah.
Like that's crazy. And for this to just all come yesterday, but not really be a surprise because there'd been so many rumblings and rumors going into it. But for them to not know until yesterday is it's just heartbreaking. The nanobiologist writes in, it says, with the tragic news of the massive layoffs from Activision Blizzard yesterday, I thought of a quasi devil's advocate question that I wanted to get your opinion on. Are any form of layoffs good? There were rumors and tweets stating these firings affected mostly administrative / advertising people who worked on Destiny at Activision and PR esports support people at Blizzard. These are unsubstantiated claims, but they led into my question. Later, during the Blizzard earnings call, they announced they would be investing 20% more into all of their major properties, including more into Warcraft and Diablo. Are layoffs okay if companies use that money to reinvest more into their properties to help them grow and succeed? This is only a devil's advocate question and not my true opinion on the matter. I truly hope that the people affected will be back on their feet soon after this very tragic and poorly handled event.
Well, yeah, I kind of have to look at what they're actually saying there, which is they're investing stuff into Call of Duty and Diablo. They're not investing into games in general. Mm-hmm. What they're doing is they're cutting down on general games in Activision and then kind of moving all that stuff to proven hits.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question of why are you cutting it down? And the answer is to make more money in the end. So yes, they're kind of expanding, but they could just be replacing the things they're cutting down. Like obviously they don't need a Destiny marketing team anymore because they're not doing Destiny, but they could do something else with that marketing team. They're just not going to because they want to focus on the ones they know make money.
Yeah.
So like, do you really need to de-incentivize Heroes of the Storm or could those people move to something else?
Mm-hmm.
So in general, I don't think there's necessarily an ethical way to do layoffs.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Layoffs are just, by definition, a horrible thing. You know, they're going to affect people's lives drastically, and nobody wants to see them coming from any side of it. Like, even the big dogs, they don't want to have this, whether that's from a ethical point of view or from a PR point of view. Like, they don't want these headlines, right? So if they could avoid them, they would. But it does get to a point where restructurings do need to happen every once in a while, and it's going to affect people. It's just 800 people? I've never heard of anything that ridiculous in our industry, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just insane. Going off a little bit of what you were saying, Farmer Josh writes in and says, hey, kind of funny, after hearing the Activision Blizzard layoffs, I got to thinking, what the hell does Activision even publish? They have Call of Duty, whatever Blizzard does, and they had Destiny. I couldn't name a single other game they publish anymore. With that said, sadly, these layoffs aren't surprising. How does Activision showcase their other titles aren't Blizzard or Call of Duty? They can't continue being a one-trick pony if they want to be successful. Am I just in the minority of not knowing what they publish, or is it a more widespread problem?
They're not a one-trick. Like, they announced yesterday, Call of Duty, Crash Bandicoot.
Crash Bandicoot. 10 million copies sold.
And like,
we saved the Bandicoot. We did, ladies and gentlemen. This is insane, though, and that's why you can see them with Spyro, with Crash Team Racing. Like, they are investing in that stuff. But again, it is a kind of guaranteed hit.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure they're looking at it like, all right, development costs for these games, marketing pushes for these games are not going to be astronomical. We can put them out in a smaller way and guarantee that we're going to get at least X return on it, right?
Right.
In the last decade, you looked at Activision, and they really were on the forefront of the Toys to Life thing with Skylanders. Mm. And that was kind of one of their big cash cows. They have multiple cash cows. I think that's an important thing to realize. It's like, one trick pony is not entirely accurate, because sure, the one trick you're referring to is Call of Duty, which is the biggest franchise in the world.
Right.
You know, then you add on to that, you have Blizzard, which has all the esports side to it. You know, it has Overwatch, it has all this potential for revenue. And it does sound like they're scaling back on that in certain ways, but they're only scaling back to be able to make more money off of that. Then you look at the kind of kiddie platformer side thing with the Crash and Spyro games, and then Activision always just has their hands in other pots.
Yeah.
Things are always going on, whether it's them trying to bring back the music genre and all that stuff or whatever.
I mean, they got Sekiro next month.
Exactly.
Like, that is not a game you'd ever expect Activision to publish, which tells me, like, there are people in that company that want to be, like, the traditional, we have all this money, why don't we spread it around kind of publisher. But, like, there's also execs that are like, well, this isn't working, or this is not making more money than it made last year.
Yeah.
So we need to cut it loose.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, it's an artistic medium, so at some point there's probably going to be a reckoning or discussion about how these two things work together.
Yeah, which definitely. At the moment, I think like, it's very problematic for the art of the industry, yeah. as you were just saying. Like, compare them to Ubisoft, right? Mm-hmm. Which I think currently are the best example of a third-party publisher, developer that is kind of nailing it across the board on a bunch of different projects and focusing on the small indie art style projects as much as they are the big AAA things, as much as they are games as a service. And I feel like you've really seen a kind of improvement in quality title for title over the last couple of years over there.
Right.
And you compare that to Activision, and it just kind of seems like, yeah, they're boiling down to these couple key things that they're just like, we're just going to go, we're going to do this, and then we're going to lay off 800 people.
Mm. And like you look at Ubisoft from a labor perspective, they never lay anyone off. I've never written a story about Ubisoft ever laying anybody off.
Interesting.
Like, there have been departures, obviously,
yeah.
but mass layoffs, never. They don't even close studios. If they close studios, they move those people to other studios.
Mm.
It's like it is a particular part of their policy. They don't. There's an old Iwata quote that's been making the rounds the last couple of day or last day, that he refused to ever lay anyone off from Nintendo. He cuts his own salary beforehand because he doesn't think people can work like make video games in a creative medium if they're worried about losing their job.
Yeah, absolutely. And he did that because of the Wii U in a direct response to the Wii U not being as big of a success as they needed it to be. That is what we all want to see happen here, and it's not going to happen, and it didn't happen, you know? Very sad news.
Yeah.
I hope that as many people as possible land on their feet from that. Continuing on with Activision news, though, Call of Duty 2019 will feature a campaign. This comes from Luke Riley at IGN. Activision has established that 2019's Call of Duty game will feature a campaign. New Activision president Rob Kostic explained 2019's Call of Duty is set to feature an entirely new campaign, a huge expansive multiplayer world, and some fun co-op gameplay. Returning CFO Dennis Durkin added that the game would be a step forward for the series, but also rooted in some of the franchise's most important history. While Activision reported that Call of Duty was the number one selling console franchise worldwide for 2018, Durkin said the company is anticipating lower Q4 sales than Black Ops 4, conceding Call of Duty units are down year over year in our outlook. What do you think could be the cause of that?
The reason it's down?
Mm-hmm.
The single-player campaign might be a part of it. World War II also did very, very well. Mm-hmm. Like, extremely well. It bucked the trend of Call of Duty going down year over year. So it's down. It's within trend of previous Call of Duty games, but World War II kind of, like, screwed that trend up by doing well.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think the rumor was, obviously, that they had a campaign. It just wasn't ready.
Mm.
So it didn't launch with the game. Then Blackout did extremely well. So they never really worried about it that much. But this to me says, yeah, we know it was an issue. It was a one-off thing. Next year is going to be, or this year, I guess, is going to be the actual, like, the Call of Duty people expect. Because it was last year was the first time it didn't ship with a single-player campaign.
Yeah.
And people noted it. Like, I talked to regular consumers that when they were about to buy the game, when they found out there was no, like, single-player game for them to, like, go through, get all the achievements, and, like, then sell the game back or whatever, they didn't buy it.
Interesting. With Apex Legends being the massive success that it is, do you see Activision turning it Blackout into a free-to-play game?
I think they either have to do that or they have to move it to this current year's game. Like, they can't just leave it as a Black Ops 4 thing, like you buy the disc or whatever. They either have to spin it off onto Battle.net or whatever they're doing with it and make it a free-to-play or cheap, like $15 mode, or they have to move it to every year's game with new improvements every year, because it has to be a living game. Like, people got, I don't want to say tired of PUBG, but people moved on from PUBG to Fortnite and other things because those developers are much more reactive to
with their seasons and all that stuff.
Yeah. Like, if you go onto the Fortnite subreddit and complain about something, someone from Epic will be there like, hey, we're looking into it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go onto the PUBG Corp or PUBG Reddit, you'll see tons of complaints and no one ever responds.
Yeah. Hey, very telling. And then moving on to Blizzard. Blizzard has no major frontline release planned for 2019. This comes from Jesse Wade at IGN. Activision announced in its quarterly earnings call Tuesday that Blizzard will not have a major frontline release for 2019. Turning to Blizzard, we expect materially lower financial performance this year. Activision said. 2018 benefited from the release of World of Warcraft Battle for Azeroth, whereas we're not planning a major frontline release for 2019. Blizzard said it finished its fourth quarter with softness for its in-game revenues that will take time to stabilize and return to growth. The call also noted that while these factors will weigh on Blizzard's financials this year, looking further ahead, Blizzard's pipeline of PC, console, and mobile content is richer than ever, and we expect the significant addition of development resources to accelerate the pace of delivery over time.
Overwatch is flat.
Like, yeah, wow. Like that's really what that's saying.
Yeah. Like, I mean, when we're talking about reactive communities and developers, Blizzard is extremely not reactive with Overwatch. Like, can you think about, are you a fan of the game at all?
Fan of the game. Not super into it, not good at it at all, but definitely a fan of it. Andy loves it.
Can you think about the various things that they announced last year? There's not a whole lot.
Like, yeah, especially compared to previous years where I feel like there was events like almost every month.
There was like Busan and Ash were the major things of the entire 2018 calendar year. So people are kind of getting tired of it, I think. Like, there's always going to be that hardcore community, and the game sold extremely well, so there will be a bunch of people. There's Overwatch League. Mm-hmm. Like, the numbers aren't, like, small by any means, but they're flat.
Yeah.
And that's a problem when you're reporting
Activision
investors.
Doesn't like this flat stuff at all, so.
But to me, that says, like, we don't have a major releases. Either they don't consider Warcraft Reforged a major release, or that game's not coming in 2019.
I'd imagine they don't consider it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that seems more of just like a side project compared to one of the bigger ones.
It also means Diablo is not coming this year.
Yeah, and I think that is really what this is trying to get at. It's like, hey, understand this. Diablo 4, not this year.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Amy Hennig feels there will be a revolution in how we receive game content. This comes from Colin Stevens at IGN. During a DICE Summit 2019 conversation between Amy Hennig and Tim Schafer, Hennig discussed narrative in games, streaming, accessibility to a wider audience, and more. As much as we would all very much own the fact that we love to play these narrative games, these things that are very intentionally authored, structured like familiar stories from film or TV or theater, and they're by definition finite. It's becoming harder and harder to make those games anymore, said Hennig, partly because of business model and cost of development, but I think it's a shame. Jumping off from that, Hennig feels the game industry is potentially set to change with the rise of streaming, saying, we're at this inflection point. Everything's going to change. We don't know. Is there another console generation after this one? Is everything just going to be streaming to us the way music and TV and movies do? Once we have the widespread adoption of 5G, is it just going to be something we take for granted like we do with music and TV and film now that, you know, at the touch of a button, you're now in this experience? And even better than that, is it going to reach people that we haven't traditionally reached that don't consider themselves gamers? There's a feeling there's this huge shift coming in 2 to 5 years, maybe a little bit longer, where our content is going to be able to reach people a lot more frictionlessly than in the past. We should be starting to make things for them now. Speaking of narrative-driven games like Uncharted, The Last of Us, and Until Dawn, Hennig said, the games are just as watchable as they are playable. They're just as entertaining to be in the living room while someone is playing, and it's not that the rest of the people are there as passive observers, they're collaborators. Those of us that are in this room, we have a very specific set of experience in terms of we know how to tell good stories and create memorable characters and worlds. We know how to do real-time development and how to do performance capture and virtual production, and we understand interactivity. You've got to understand that intersection of those three disciplines is really small, so there's going to be a revolution in how we receive content. There's a lot of people in Hollywood trying to figure this out right now, but they don't know what we know. God, she's cool.
She is thinking on a level that, like, I don't think most developers or even like most gamers are currently thinking on, which is that things are going to change in the next couple. Like, we're looking at not just when people hear cloud streaming, they think, oh, we're going to get the exact same thing, but over the internet, which is not necessarily how it's going to be. It's going to be like you now have everything on every device, and thus you can consume content whenever and wherever you want, or your kid can, like, let's say an example like Uncharted. Like, you can play the Uncharted game, but there's also going to be like side stories and things like that that are submarine content on other devices or other ways you can receive the medium, which is like a very base level of what she's probably talking about, not even close to what she's thinking. But there's going to probably, like she said, there's going to be a revolution in the way people take in content, which is not necessarily going to be the big single player game anymore.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate for people like us, I feel, who like will always hold on to that single player core experience. And I feel like if anything, the last 2 years has proven that they're not going anywhere anytime soon.
Right.
Right. With things like Horizon, God of War, it's like there's definitely a Last of Us coming up soon-ish. there is still an emphasis on these super high quality narrative driven games that are single player focused experiences. But what she's talking about these, like the people in the room, they're not just watching, they're collaborating. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's really touching on something important that I think that we'll see the industry kind of dive into a bit more come next generation, when it is a bit more accessible, where there's not potentially not a need to buy a $300, $400 console right. to be able to have that experience and to be able to have that experience in different ways. Because at some point, everyone's going to have a smartphone
if they
don't already. But, you know, there's going to be multiple in a household. There's going to be multiple ways for people to be able to experience the same thing in different ways that fit their styles best, right? There was more quotes that she had. This is a super interesting discussion she did. You should definitely check out the video. But another thing she was saying I'm totally blanking on what I was saying there. Give me one second.
I mean, like you mentioned, the examples you had were Horizon and mm-hmm. like God of War. Like, telling that those are first party games. Like, the people who want to make those kind of games that feel that they're worthy investments are usually first parties or major corporations like Sony and Take-Two yep. and stuff like that
mm-hmm.
that feel like they could take the loss for the prestige.
Yeah.
Like, not every game is going to sell like Red Dead Redemption 2, so no one's going to invest $150 million into it.
Exactly. What I was going to say is she was talking about how so many people are just used to just watching Netflix, but that's not the only thing they're doing.
Yeah.
They're watching Netflix with an iPad in their hand, mindlessly playing some games. She was saying that there's so many more people out there now than ever that are gamers that don't necessarily realize they're gamers. And it's like all they need to do is, like, all Amy Hennig and these developers and all these people, they just need to figure out how to convert them and make them understand that gaming doesn't need to be you're sitting there with a super complicated controller in your hand. It can be you just being a part of this interactive experience with someone else doing that or, right. or whatever. Really interesting stuff. Very exciting, too. Like, I don't think I've ever been as excited for the next generation of consoles
mm-hmm.
ever. Just because we don't know what this is going to be. And it's not just going to be, oh, it looks prettier.
Yeah.
You know, for so long, I feel like that was all that was being added is how HD can it be? And now it's like, we're pretty damn HD. We're good on the Ds. You know what I mean?
I think like stuff like Jackbox is going to be not necessarily that series, but like, yeah. That kind of thing is going to be huge in the future. Like, my sister-in-law doesn't really play video games. She has had a ton of fun just playing Jackbox with us.
Jackbox is amazing, man. It's a revolution for exactly this. Convincing people they're gamers that would never like identify that way, right?
Yeah. Like, you never have to convince someone that they're a board gamer to play Monopoly.
Exactly. Alex Russ writes in and says, Amy Hennig has touched on her thoughts that she feels there will be a revolution in how we receive game content, according to an article from Colin Stevens on IGN. With gaming as a live service seeing great successes, Apex, Monster Hunter, Fortnite, etc., it seems that this idea is where gaming is headed as a whole. However, narrative experiences generally aren't served in such a way. The closest example I can think of would be an MMO like Final Fantasy XIV and the attempt that Battlefield V made with their single-player content. I couldn't see a game like God of War releasing in such an episodic format, but I find myself appreciating shorter experiences more and more. Do you think that narrative experiences will somehow become affected by the games as a service format? Or perhaps we're already there and currently trying to figure out how to properly market that experience from a single player standpoint. God of War was clearly a shining example that, if done well, single player experiences can be very powerful. But does the cost of these types of games justify the means? I love God of War and single player experiences like it, but even Activision Blizzard found success and they're finding ways to cut costs with their live games in extremely unfortunate ways. I mean, I think a lot of what we were just talking about kind of goes into this. I think that we saw Until Dawn, right? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of just a massive success that came out of nowhere. You know, I feel like that was definitely a moment where everyone was playing at the same time and having this like shared experience.
Right.
And seeing the direction that they're taking their games now, where it is a bit more bite-sized episodic contents that I forgot the name of the anthology series that they're...
The Dark Pictures?
Yes, Dark Pictures. Like, I feel like that is a perfect reaction to this, where it's not games as a service, and it's not episodic in the way of you need to, this is episode one, this is episode two, this is episode three, but it is kind of just like the anthology idea that we're going to give you these interactive narrative single-player stories in smaller bite-sized bits where maybe it is 2 hours, maybe it's 3 hours, 4 or 5, whatever, mm-hmm. but it's not a sprawling 20-hour game that requires the budget to... be astronomical, which is then going to make the returns a lot lower if they don't sell insane numbers, right? And I feel like that's a good example of taking that style and going forward with it. For something like God of War, I personally believe we'll always have games like that. Maybe not too many of them, but I feel like those are the prestige pieces that are not the only thing making these companies money. They're the things that keep people coming back and supporting PlayStation, right? It's like PlayStation's team of first-party studios. You have to look at all of them as a whole and what they're all doing and how they're all selling to be able to judge one of them. Right. And I think God of War is a perfect example of like when there's the quality there, people are going to come to PlayStation. And that's something that we see Microsoft struggle a lot with this generation. And I'm expecting that to change next one.
Yeah. I mean, like people need to reconsider what they think of episodic in general. Like people think of Telltale Games and The Walking Dead and every episode for a month and then a season begins the next year and all that. Like Life is Strange 2 is a very good example of what this concept is going to be of there was one episode at launch, there was another episode last month, there might not be another episode until like another couple of months. Mm-hmm. They're taking their time, they're charging a little bit more, they're telling a bigger story, what they want, like a higher budget. Like the idea that an episodic game needs to necessarily be low budget or be let are more frequent is not necessarily true. Mm-hmm. Like God of War, not an episodic game, like he says, but that game leaves mysteries, it leaves hooks. Like, Corey Barlog has talked about how he wanted to make DLC to answer some of those questions, but it became too big and they couldn't do it. So, was that DLC just going to be another episode? Are they moving that on to another game? Do you really necessarily need to call a sequel, like, a sequel? Is it God of War 2? Like, there's a lot of ways you can format the idea.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't necessarily mean, like, episodic game means low budget.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this might be an unpopular opinion, but Uncharted Lost Legacy, I would gladly take one of those every 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, just like a Uncharted side story where it's just like, what are these characters doing? What are those characters doing? Like, we're not going to get an Uncharted quality game every even 4 years, I would say, because of the budget and the scale of it all. But it's like, if it was a smaller title like that, I think that that could be episodic in the way that, again, I feel the moment that you would assign like consistent structure to it of the episode one, episode two, episode three, you lose people with every single one.
Right.
Right.
Which is a lesson Valve learned really well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, then when you, if you were to just put them out and like, it's like they all work together, but they're not, you don't need to have played the one before to play the next one. I think that's the future of where we're going with this. Next story, Xbox announces plans to expand gaming through technology. This comes from Jesse Wade at IGN. Microsoft announced its plans for expanding gaming to its users over the next decade at DICE 2019 on Tuesday. Head of Global Gaming Partnerships and Development at Xbox and Microsoft, Sarah Bond, spoke about the methods that will be implemented by Xbox to put their visions into reality. Bond noted the amount of gamers globally at the moment and what the growth rate will be like by the year 2030. Of the 8 billion people on the planet, 4 billion of them are digitally connected and 2 billion of them are gamers. By 2030, the 8 will become 9, the 4 will become 5, but the big number is of the 2 billion, that will become 4 billion. Nearly half of the world's population will be playing games. Bond continued by touching on crossplay and saying, "We envision a world where you can play any game with anyone on any device. A world where gaming connects each and every one of those 4 billion players," Bond said. Microsoft wants to focus on letting gamers share experiences despite which console they are playing on or their physical abilities. No matter device, location, appearance, or physical ability, doing our part and unlocking that future, that is our passion. It drives us every single day. Bond then announced Microsoft's plan to use three technologies to enhance gaming experiences for players in the future. These include connectivity, cloud, and artificial intelligence / machine learning. For connectivity, Microsoft invested in Project xCloud, where players will be able to play any game natively from the cloud on any device, including mobile phones. Microsoft has also invested in services such as PlayFab that will help developers create through the cloud without worrying about the back end and share their worlds with others through those platforms. Lastly, artificial intelligence and machine learning is meant to help players modify games to their own abilities, with the game adapting itself to the players through algorithms that translate the input across controller, keyboard, and touch. For example, Forza has a fairly complicated control scheme, but most of the time people just hold down the gas and steer. So for touch input, we're experimenting with a control scheme where you can actually just use your screen to steer, accelerate, and brake. That's it, Bond said. all these news stories are so fascinating. When you look at all the financial reports that have been coming in this last week, and then you look at DICE going on right now and all these brilliant minds talking about where the future of gaming is headed. Mm. It's just so insane to imagine where we'll be in 2030.
It's ridiculous. And like Microsoft, for as many missteps as they had this generation, they're really looking forward in a way that I don't think anyone else is.
Mm-hmm.
Like Nintendo and Sony, like bless their hearts, they're doing what's right for them.
Mm-hmm.
But Microsoft is like, a couple of years ago, they wanted to get away from console sales and start talking about like how many monthly active users they have,
mm-hmm.
which I think this is like dovetailing with this nicely, that they want to have that account that anybody can use on any device, like whether you, like Henning said, sitting with an iPad in front of a movie or playing a game or whatever, like they want those people to be gamers,
mm-hmm.
and to be playing an Xbox game. And I think this is always a very smart move for them.
Very smart move. And I think that's very, very cool of them, and telling that every single time they start talking about the cloud and where Microsoft and Xbox are going to be in a couple of years, they talk about the adaptive controller. They talk about the physical side of this as well. And like that really is a cornerstone to their business. Like them putting that as their Super Bowl commercial, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know,
it was a great commercial.
It was a great commercial. And I love the focus on all of this and like them talking about these three technologies. You're right. They are looking forward in a way that the other guys, at least publicly, aren't doing. But them talking about it now is preparing us for that future. I can't wait, man. Very exciting stuff. Next up, Metro Exodus reviews are in. Open Critic has it at an 83. Metacritic at an 81 for the PlayStation 4 version. IGN gave it an 8.5. GameSpot an 8. Performing very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's impressive stuff. I didn't expect much from it, and everything I heard from the previews was really bad. So this is kind of shocking to me.
Yeah, I mean, I've played the previous two Metro games for a while, and at some point, like, they either lose me or they're a little too oppressive for their own good, or mm-hmm. for at least my preferences. Well, Matt Birch has been playing it for Game Informer. He's been telling me, like, from what he's been saying, it seems like this is a really good one, and I'm eager to give it a try myself.
That's awesome, man, because, yeah, it was like, it must have been last year at Judges Week. Everyone was super down on it. Like, I remember I only came through to play Kingdom Hearts down there, and that was, like, the last demo of the week. And so I was hanging out with a lot of people, and I was asking them, like, oh, like, what was the best? What was the worst? And everyone was like, the worst was definitely Metro Exodus. And
which I'm is
like,
around when I got a delay.
Yeah, exactly. So, hey, maybe the delay helped out there. Yep. Oh, man. So you're going to play Metro Exodus.
I'm going to give it a shot, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When do you think you're going to play it?
Hopefully this coming weekend or next weekend.
This weekend seems so far away. If I want to know what games are coming out today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
Do 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 do. Yeah. Fuck you, Barrett. Why are you looking at me like that?
You don't have any fun with it.
I don't have any fun with it. I hate the jingle. It's stupid. God, Greg Miller, you're a monster. Out today, just one thing, Away, Journey to the Unexpected on Windows. It's been making the rounds, coming out on every system the last couple of days. So now, Windows, you can get it. Deals of the day for you. This comes from Hilly Brums. Amazon currently has the PlayStation Classic for 60% off at only $39.99. Oh, down an additional 10% from Monday's deal. Kotaku says that Red Dead Redemption 2 hasn't had any trouble selling copies. So if you've been waiting for months for a decent discount, it's finally down to $40 today on both PS4 and Xbox One. That's insane. And now it's time for reader mail. But before we get to that, let me tell you that this episode is brought to you by Hims. 66% of men lose their hair by age 35. The thing is, when you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost. That's why you should be like Nick and Andy and go to 4hims.com, a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Thanks to science, baldness can be optional. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. These are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. It's no snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. These are prescription solutions backed by science. No waiting rooms, no awkward in-person doctor visits. Save hours by going to 4hims.com. Andy and Nick did it. They went online, talked to a doctor, sent in some photos, and got matched with a prescription to help fight their thinning hair. You can order now. Listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to the doctor or a pharmacy. Go to FORHIMS.com/gamesdaily. That's 4hims.com/gamesdaily. Now it's time for reader mail. You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. And if you're at the bronze membership or above, you get to write in questions. Just like Why Not Pete did. Pete writes in and says, hey, happy Wednesday, Tim and Imran. My unpopular gaming opinion is that I think Final Fantasy VIII was the best of the PlayStation Final Fantasy titles. So I wanted to hear you guys' thoughts on the matter. Why isn't Square Enix remastering it along with the other titles for Switch? What possible reason could they have for holding it back, especially when there's a PC version of it that you can buy right now? Thanks, and great to have you on the show.
So the thing I've heard, because I've looked into this myself, because it does seem
it's
odd.
It's weird. It's like, all right, we got Final Fantasy 7, 9, 10, 10, 2. It's like, okay, well, what about 8?
Because it does have a PC version on Steam. From what I've heard, that PC version is actually the port that released way back in the 90s or early 2000s for PC. So all they had to do was just put that version on Steam and update it for modern OSs. The reason it's not remastered like the other ones is either it's a copyright thing with Eyes on Me, which is the main theme.
That's what I've heard, is that it's a music licensing issue.
Or Square Enix just straight up lost the source code.
And that also could be the case.
Which is that's a thing that a lot of Japanese developers have done in the past. Like when they needed space or there had been like a critical error or something, like the source code just gets lost and you can't really replace that. Like you could reverse engineer it all with like a lot of work and a team working on it. But for, I guess, like a simple PS1 remaster, they're probably not going to do that.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's the music licensing situation with Eyes on Me. Also, Final Fantasy VIII, not my personal favorite. I love that the people like it, but
you love 11, right?
I hate you so much. I hate you so much. What are your thoughts on 8?
I liked it a lot. It definitely has its flaws, like the battle system is straight up broken.
And that's my thing. It wasn't fun to me. Story is cool, characters are cool, but yeah, I just didn't really enjoy the gameplay as much as I did with 7.
Yeah. I was actually looking at a thing yesterday, like the Legend of Localization guy, Clyde Mandolin.
Uh-huh.
He was looking at every instance of when Squall says whatever and what it actually is in Japanese. And apparently, like, it's in 15 instances, it's most commonly in Japanese, like, him saying, well, excuse me.
Uh-huh.
It's like he's more like a sarcastic ass in the Japanese version, just kind of a dick in the American one.
That's so crazy how little localization things can totally change characters' personalities.
So now that's the line most associated with him. Like, he never really says that often.
Huh. So funny. Learned Astronomer writes in and says, hey guys, from following you on Twitter and listening to your appearances on the GI show, it seems like you always have your ear to the ground when it comes to Nintendo leaks and rumors. Metroid Prime 4 and Trilogy HD's development, Mother 3's localization being canceled. I was wondering if you had any scoops for us ahead of today's Direct. Thanks for reading and keep up the great work.
Let me think. If most people are like me, then they watch this like later in the day.
Uh-huh.
So they've probably already seen the Direct. So I also don't want to spoil anything that's for a thing coming today. Let me hint at something, I guess.
Let's go, baby.
Because like this is a thing that I'm going to write up at some point as soon as I get more sources on it. But there's a game that's thought to be dead that Nintendo's reviving. And it's not one that people would expect. Like it was very much a title that was like dead and buried. Very officially canceled.
I got chills. I want everyone to know I got fucking chills. I can't wait. I've been hearing some good things about this Direct. So people have been DMing me like, hey, this tomorrow's going to be a good one.
It might actually be at the Direct. I don't know for sure, but I've heard like this. I've heard enough about this game that I'm all sure it exists again.
Wow. That's really, really cool. Let's go down the list of stuff. And if you know anything too concrete, like let's not spoil stuff here for this. But do we think Luigi's Mansion makes an appearance?
I would assume so. It's a 2019 game, and they've not talked about it beyond the initial trailer.
Yeah. Do you think we got Animal Crossing?
Also a 2019 game, and again, not a thing they've talked about since last September.
Do you think we see F-Zero?
No.
Do you think we see Elite Beat Agents?
Absolutely not. Inus is well out of the game at this point.
So, Smash Brothers. What do you think we get?
I would not be shocked if we got Joker gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
As of the Game Awards, Sakurai did not have anything to show yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a couple of months. Maybe he has like some gameplay ready. I assume if Joker is going to be ready for like let's say March, April, then it would make sense to show him now.
That's what I'm thinking too. I feel pretty confident we'll see Joker gameplay.
I just want to hear the music. Play the Persona 5 like remixes.
So, if we get Joker gameplay, do you think we also get a new character reveal, like the next DLC? Because I think that we will.
So the rumor right now is Erdrick from Dragon Quest.
Mm-hmm.
There's also another rumor going around that Nintendo has a bunch of Dragon Quest ports to announce as well.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume that they announced those two things at the same time.
Yeah.
If those are both real.
Yeah.
So
it would be a good time to do that. That makes a lot of sense to me. There's been rumors of Kingdom Hearts floating around on Nintendo Switch in some way, some form.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Last I heard, there was a talk between Nintendo and Square Enix about what they could do with Kingdom Hearts 3. It was deemed unfeasible to get Kingdom Hearts 3 on the Switch. Even though it's an Unreal Engine 3 game, it's a very demanding Unreal Engine 3 game, mm-hmm. and not something you could necessarily like put without paring it down a lot.
Yeah.
I think the remasters, those are a good bet.
Mm-hmm.
I think those will come eventually. If it's this year, maybe. I don't know if it's actually actively being worked on, but I think that's probably where they settled on it.
So with that, and I don't know if you have any information on this, but like, why didn't they put HD Remix 1.2 or 1.5, 2.5, all that stuff on Xbox?
I think after Type-0 HD's sales, which were very low on Xbox One, they kind of decided, well, there's clearly no real like HD remastered JRPG audience on this console.
Mm.
So while 15 did well, it did better on PS4, which is not surprising. Like, mm-hmm. the audience is there, and it's a bigger console base in the first place. Kingdom Hearts 3, I'm guessing, did pretty well on Xbox as well, but not anywhere in the same numbers. I think, from what I've heard, a lot of developers, including Square Enix, have figured Microsoft is going to really turn it around next generation. So there's going to be more make goods in the future.
Mm.
So I don't think we're ever going to see another situation where like titles like that are going to skip the Xbox One.
Mm.
Like Nier Automata, like that came out not because they thought it would be a big barn buster for Xbox One, but because like, okay, well, you're clearly making all the right overtures, so we're going to make sure that there's an audience for our games there next time.
That's awesome. Let's see, what else do we got here? Kebabs writes in and says, sup, kind of funny crew. I have a prediction for what might show up in the Nintendo Direct later today. Spyro Reignited. This is due to a fair amount of evidence, such as trailers that have improved lighting and animations, Nintendo's UK and GameStop Germany putting up listings for pre-ordering a Switch version, and the game's website having a slot open on the platform drop-down menu under PS4 and Xbox One. That aside, I personally think it's high time that we get a port of Super Mario 3D World and an enhanced port of Super Mario Maker with the campaign from the 3DS version. I could even see Nintendo making a special cable that runs from the Switch to the dock so the Switch can function like the Wii U. What do you guys think? Let's start at the top. Spyro. I think it's pretty likely.
Yeah, seems likely. Crash made it.
Yeah.
Spyro only didn't make it because they were kind of running to the wire on that game.
Yeah.
I would not be shocked at all if there's a Switch version announced soon.
I think we're going to get Spyro on the Switch for sure. I think it's likely to be announced at the Direct today.
I could see it, yeah. Like, again, Crash sold extremely well, obviously.
Across all the platforms.
So that's a game you definitely want to show, like, front and center.
The next up, we got Mario 3D World. Let's start there. We need this on Switch.
Right.
I'm a little surprised we haven't seen it yet, based on how port happy they've been with the Wii U titles. And I think that the reason we haven't seen it is that they didn't want it too close to Mario Odyssey, just because they're two 3D Mario games. But now that we got New Super Mario Bros. U out of the way, for lack of a better way to say that, I think we had 3D World. I don't think it'll be announced today, though.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Deluxe just came out.
Yeah.
So they're probably going to let that set for a while.
Yeah.
Because that is one of the marquee Wii U titles. Like, obviously, they're going to bring it over at some point.
Mm-hmm.
Unless Deluxe just incredibly bombed, which I really doubt.
There's no way.
Yeah.
It's going to sell better than the Wii U version.
Yeah, definitely.
Did. Like, every single game that they've ported has sold better. It's, they're going to continue to do that. Yeah, 3D World is one of my favorite games. I love it so much, and I love the multiplayer side of it, though, and I feel like it would totally fit on Switch.
Yeah,
so.
With the two Joy-Con, like that game was playable with Wiimotes.
Yeah,
like,
so I think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen today. And then Super Mario Maker. That's the one where I'm like, I want that so, so badly. But I want a sequel. It doesn't need to be called two, but I don't want it to be just a port.
Yeah. That would be great. I've been thinking a lot about Super Mario Maker lately, especially in terms of streaming. So I've been wondering about how the controls would work on a new game.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be a cable that
no.
runs from the dock. I think that complicates the Switch too much. Although, Nintendo's fucking crazy. They've done nuts things in the past, so I don't know.
Yeah, I was talking to Andre from Game Explain, and he was saying, like, he wants multi-Switch support so he can, like, have it on the TV and in his hands at the same time.
Mm.
And I'm like, they're never going to do that.
Yeah, no. What do you think the next Mario Maker would be?
I would think it would be probably, there's not a whole lot you can do with it besides adding themes, adding the couple of things that were missing in the first Mario Maker, like slopes. Yeah. But like, I think that would be enough. Like,
yeah.
Really, you just want to get that thing on a modern platform that people can use and just have fun building Mario levels.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved the 3DS version because of that campaign. Mm-hmm. It sucked from every other aspect. Like the way that you downloaded stuff and the way you could even find levels was super just nerfed. Like yeah. It was such a clear, blatant decision of them being like, hey, we want this to be the inferior version. Like we want to focus on the Wii U one.
I love the event stuff. Like they had the Game Center CX guy make levels.
Yeah.
It was always a very interesting thing of like, oh, this is how this person's level design mind works.
Yeah. And like, I can't wait for it to come out on Switch because I feel like there's just such a bigger, better, there's a better vibe towards Nintendo right now. And mm-hmm. also there's just people like the Switch. They want to like the Switch yeah. in a way they wanted to hate the Wii U for good reason. But yeah. All right. I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Mikey D says, with THQ Nordic reporting a sales increase of 713%, do you see this as a sign that AAA gaming might finally be making a resurgence?
They have such a huge profit number because they haven't really done much in the last, like, Darksiders 3 was one of their first original games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they mostly subsist on remasters and remakes and stuff like that. So in the future, as they start making more original games, they're I can see the kind of double A mentality working well for them because there has to be somebody.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, like, you look at Darksiders 3 reviews and sales, and a lot of people like reviewing it as kind of this doesn't do the things AAA games do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's still pretty much in line with the other Darksiders games. So it's a question of where the industry is at. If they're going to lead the charge, it's going to be a rough couple of years.
Yeah.
But THQ Nordic is huge. Like, yeah. They're honestly, I think, the biggest publisher in Europe, period. So they're not going to be hurting for... If they want to lead the charge, they definitely have the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know that it's a sign that AA gaming's making a resurgence. Right. I feel like we're going to continue to see this divide of the big AAA and the smaller indies. But I do think that what we'll see the more AA games is what we're talking about earlier with like the Dark Pictures
yeah.
type situations. So
I mean, the real AA is between like indies, like the more low budget indies and the higher stuff. Like you have the Wargroove just came out, and that's not a cheap game.
Yeah,
that is a very like lovingly crafted, very slaved upon game that probably did not cost that little to make.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I want to jump right to the squad up. You can go to kindoffunny.com or patreon.com/kindoffunnygames to squad up with some best friends out there. Farmer Josh is playing on PlayStation 4. His PSN name is DumbAce15. That's DumbAce15. He says, hey, Kind of Funny best friends, Battlefield 5 just launched its new co-op mode, and I'd love to check it out with some fellow best friends. I've also been playing Apex Legends and Titanfall 2 lately. I'd love to squad up in any of those games as well. Go help your boy Farmer Josh out, DumbAce15 on PSN. And this is a PSA from one of you guys out there. Reclusive Dragon says, just a PSA for people playing Apex Legends on PS4 and getting the same crashes Andy was having. I was getting blue screen crashes every second or third match. After searching Apex's forums, I found a post saying that there's a bug with the convert incoming voice to chat text setting that causes it. Turning off this setting fixed it for me, so if people are having issues, check that setting. I've heard a lot of people complaining about PS4 crashes, but it took ages to find the solution for my issue, so hopefully this helps people. P.S. This setting is off by default. That's why most people are not getting the crashes. Check it out.
I once kicked somebody and it had a blue screen, so I was like, all right, that's cool. Like, if it's gonna crash, it better crash when I kill someone.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Let's see. Time for You're Wrong. Let's see what I got wrong today. Let's see.
How you doing, Timmy? Feeling a lot wrong, or?
No, it's, you know, a lot of people riding in.
People and their opinions, you know what I mean? It's not the place for them.
Capitalist Pig says, regarding Warcraft Reforged release year, the pre-order page for Reforged still lists the following. Will be released on or before December 31st, 2019.
Oh, man, it's raining.
Justin H says, as for episodic games, I would say with the roadmap Anthem has put out, it would be considered an episodic AAA title. That's interesting, but I still feel like that falls more on the games as a service side
mm-hmm.
than it does like a traditional single player experience. Nanobiologist says, breaking news, THQ Nordic has bought Warhouse Studios, known yeah. for Kingdom Come Deliverance.
I saw that this morning. Like I said, they're huge.
Yeah.
It went from no raining noise to so much.
I know. Nanobiologist says Kingdom Hearts 3 is actually on Unreal Engine 4, not 3.
Oh, yeah. I missed that.
Stead Jonat says multi-switch support, at least in handheld mode. Mario Party does that now. You can go from screen to screen in some minigames.
That's true.
That is true. I still don't see them adding that level.
Not for Mario Maker, not like that. It's a cool feature, but like hunched over a table, like watching
the. Have you guys ever tried it?
Yeah, it's like, neat.
The Mario Party thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool.
But no more than just the trying for like understanding, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're fun minigames, but they're like, I don't think they're as good as the normal minigames. Ignacio Ross says, I know this isn't the place, but no one's mentioned it. Will you do a watch along for the direct? So here's the issue. Our internet here sucks. Comcast is coming here to try to fix it, which means we're not going to have internet during the time that the direct is happening. Because we didn't know the direct was happening, so we had to plan around that. Whatever. Okay. I'm going to go home and try to stream it from home. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, I'll see you 2 p.m. twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. Otherwise, I'll probably just record my reactions and put them up on YouTube later. New date, Sire says, Trine 1 to 3 physical editions coming spring 2019 with Trine 2 coming February 18th. And that's it. All right.
Nice. Did good, Tim.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. This
thank
is fantastic.
For having me.
Where can people find you?
They can find me on GameInformer.com or on my Twitter at IMRANZOMG.
There you go. Got to follow them. Have a good time. All right. Everybody, get hyped. Nintendo Direct, 2 p.m. Hopefully, I'll see you there. Until next time, I love you.
Who's tomorrow's host?
Tomorrow's host is me and Cheeks Jr., baby.
Wow, Cheeks!
Yeah, dude. Now we shake our hands. It's a whole thing.